Amateur Presentation.
Welcome back to another Untitled Movie Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Rohrbeck, alongside, he's allergic to tomatoes, but he is tomato meter approved, Eric Marchin.
Matt, I'm cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. How are you doing?
I am cuckoo for Coca-Cola. Let's just go with that.
Did you ever have Cocoa Puffs? Is that something that's in Canada?
It's not. So is Cocoa Puffs the Flintstones one? Like Fruity Pebbles?
It's like a bird on the front. That's their mascot.
Okay, so I'm thinking Cocoa Pebbles, right? That's
yes.
What I'm thinking.
Or Fruity Cocoa Pebbles.
Puffs. Fruity Pebbles and Fruity Cocoa. Pebbles. Well, there's Cocoa ones too, right?
Like, Cocoa Pebbles?
What are the fucking Fruity Pebbles Cocoa?
This ones? Is Cereal Talk with Matt Rohrbeck and Eric Marchin.
Cocoa Pebbles? Is that a thing? Yeah, Cocoa Pebbles is a thing. Okay. Which we do have in Canada now. Cocoa Puffs, we never did, I think. So I don't know if I can say I'm cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Although I do appreciate cereal and cereal mascots. I'm not familiar with this bird that's on the front of the Cocoa Puffs.
I think
box,
it's a cuckoo.
A cuckoo bird. Well, there you go. That makes sense. Hey, everybody, we're reviewing.
We're critics.
Tillman Singer's Cuckoo, which just had its, I'm assuming, Canadian premiere, but they didn't specify it as that, at the TIFF Next Wave Film Festival. It stars Hunter Schafer, Jessica Henwick, Dan Stevens, Jan Bluthart, Martin, I'm going to butcher his last name, Sokas, I'm going to go with. Eric, how are you doing other than being cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs?
Well, Matt, since we brought up the cereal thing, did you ever have Reese's Pieces cereal?
Just Reese's Puffs is what they're called. Yeah, I had them. I'm not a huge fan, to be honest. My favorite cereal...
Of Reese's Pieces in general or just the cereal?
I like Reese's Pieces, but I'm not a big Reese's fan. Like peanut butter, I love peanut butter and chocolate. I like, but I know people are like diehard, like Reese's, like fuck anything Reese's, I'll fuck up. But like, I'm never been a peanut butter, and a peanut butter cereal thing never really did it for me. I was always a Cap'n Crunch, Sugar Crisp, where my Sugar Crisp did a similar thing as asparagus, where it would make your pee smell like Sugar Crisp. Like, I swear to God,
I can't get enough of that sugar crisp.
It would turn into sugar piss, and like, that was the one thing I noticed. So like, I guess as a kid, it's like the sugar piss to asparagus piss pipeline. It's just something
I think
that
I say
always,
ratio
like always connected those two things. Like, I don't know what's in Sugar Crisp that makes your pee smell that way.
Probably chemicals.
Horrible chemicals that just ate away my body as a child. Those were always my jam. You know, I liked a Rice Krispie where you would just sprinkle sugar on it and then you would just get a spoonful of sugar with some Rice Krispies.
Yeah.
And then now I'm a bit, I love fucking, I could do 30 minutes on cereal, an hour on cereal. One thing I've always like inherited from, you know, you get things from your father, right? Like your
hate for Pepsi.
Yeah. My hate for Pepsi, my love of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and cereals are those things. Like, my dad fucking loved Captain Crunch, and that's where I got that from. And my dad now, as he's older, mini wheats are his thing. And I have recently become obsessed with mini wheats, and like, I eat so much
frosted mini wheats,
frosted mini wheats.
Yeah.
And, I guess that fucking pipeline to sugar cereal as a kid to sugar cereal that's not as bad as some of those other ones for you as an adult is kind of where I'm going, because they're very filling. They still have some sugar, ton of fiber.
Good for the digestions.
Keep you regular, baby. And then, it's such a great, like, whenever I'm like hungry, but I don't feel like eating anything, I'm like, you know what? Bowl of mini wheats. And I'm set for like the rest of the afternoon or the night, because they're just dense. And, I still love a Cinnamon Toast Crunch as well, but they give me bad acid reflux.
Yeah.
If we just sound so old, but,
well, there's Weetabix in there. What was the kind of like the big
just sort of Wheaties?
The big chunk.
The big chunk of like, it's like a giant mini wheat, right?
Yeah.
Which is,
but without any frosting on it. And then you have to put sugar on it.
No, then you might as well just get the frosted mini wheat. Like, yeah. They're good. And they have like different kinds of mini wheats now, and they're never as good as the classic. They got like the brown sugar, they got the honey, they got the blueberry. It's like, just give me the regular. And they now even have mini wheats where they're like little tinier ones.
Oh, was it Weetabix? I think it was Weetabix.
It might have been something like that, but a shredded wheat or something like that, wasn't it? Like,
well, there's cream of wheat, which is like a porridge alternative, which is like white.
While
gloopy.
We're on top of breakfast things, get the fuck out of here with porridge and fucking oatmeal and shit. That stuff is awful. It's terrible. I'm a big texture guy, and that's why like my wife doesn't love mini wheats, because she finds that they get soggy too quickly
and they break apart.
And I'm like, you don't have the fucking vacuum gullet like I do, where I just shovel that shit into my mouth before it gets soggy.
Well, it becomes sawdust, like, basically, in milk, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I think it's great. You get that little bit of crunch still. Like, I can't have them be completely soggy, but porridge and fucking oatmeal, get out of here.
We've talked about this as well, because I know in the past, like when it comes to texture, the gelatinous thing as well, yeah, like you don't like pudding.
I hate bananas for that reason.
What about like Greek yogurt and
so if I put granola in it, I'm good. But right. Yogurt on its own, I've recently come to yogurt and pudding, very similar to me.
Getting old.
I don't mind, because it's almost like that smooth. It's like something that I feel like you should be chewing. That's what grosses me out, you right. know what I mean? Like, it's that middle ground, like pudding and yogurt. I can kind of get past its texture, because it almost feels like a liquid almost. But like, I do like granola in my like yogurt, like my Greek yogurt. Like, I like a vanilla Greek yogurt with just some like granola clusters. Like, are you a cereal guy? Did you?
Yeah, no, I did. Like, Reese's Pieces was a big thing.
Reese's
for me.
Was yours.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Cinnamon Toast Crunch was like my go-to.
I also have this spiced Coca-Cola, which I've never had.
Nice.
Have you tried this?
Not a sponsor, but we would take it if they offered. Yeah, Reese's Pieces. I really liked.
It smells terrible. Oh no.
Let's tune in real time and see how Matt takes the spicy Coke.
I don't like it.
You don't like it?
It's raspberry.
Did you buy just one?
I didn't realize. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. If you bought like a whole, you know, like six pack or something like that.
No. Don't buy this. Don't buy Coca-Cola spiced zero sugar.
Still want to try the spicy lemonade at Starbucks, though.
Oh, I got one.
How was it? It was
good, Eric. Yeah. I would get it without sugar next time. Like, I think they put extra liquid sugar, because you're already mixing it with lemonade, which is naturally very tart and sweet. Where I think Starbucks always does this thing where they think everyone wants diabetes that gets their drink. Like, I just don't
understand at most
how much
places.
Sugar they put in their everything. It's like certain things with sugar, they add more sugar to it. And I'm like, just give me the fucking thing with no sugar. This tastes terrible. Sorry to cut you off.
No. Yeah, Cinnamon Toast Crunch was always my go-to in terms of healthy stuff. Like, obviously, like, you know, Cheerios and Honey Bunches of Oats and things like that.
I loved a Honey Nut Cheerio, yeah.
Yeah, I was never allowed to have Fruit Loops because of the dye. It would make me hyper.
The red dye is what will probably kill us all in like 10 years, right?
Yeah. So I might live a little longer, because I never had that as a kid.
I fucked up a lot of Fruit Loops. Yeah.
But I was never a big fan of like the marshmallows in you know.
Yeah.
Lucky,
you know, Lucky
Charms
never did much for me, or like, I forget what other cereals would have marshmallow, but because they were always like a weird marshmallow, right? Like, they're not.
Yeah. Well, they just kind of tasted like you were like, they had a little bit of like a sweet taste to them, but it mostly felt like you were biting into like cardboard or styrofoam or something like that. Yeah. Breakfast. I was never like the biggest breakfast guy, but in terms of like the sweet stuff, Cinnamon Toast Crunch was always my jam. Oh, I mean, you know, bacon and eggs and things like that was
always
great.
Yeah. Me and you will go to a 3 PM.
But also going back to kind of the more gelatinous sort of formless food, I agree with you when you're eating something that is kind of almost like a blob and you're putting it in your mouth, and especially when it's like a mass, there's something that your mind is telling your body. It's like, don't eat this.
I don't know. It's like mushy stuff.
Yeah.
It's
and like, even worse is cottage cheese. My mom would eat that all the time.
My wife, Nevis, loves it.
I can't do it. Like the chunkiness.
It's the chunks, yeah. cottage cheese, I don't, it's a great thing to use. It has a ton of protein and it's low in calories. And not that I'm a fucking health nut, look at my body, but like it's really good to make like sauces and stuff. Like if you add other things to it and blend it up, it makes like a really good, healthier mac and cheese sauce. And like we use it for a lot of like pasta sauces and stuff like
but
that.
But if you're putting a blob on, you know, Nevis, a cracker like,
Nevis
or
will
something.
Just, like, or... Nevis will eat that shit with a spoon, bro.
I appreciate I that Nevis either. Is keeping healthy. That's great. And that she loves it. But yeah, there's just something about the consistency of cottage cheese and the smell. I can't take it. I just can't do it. And I'm not against like cheeses, you know, like
I'm surprised I like avocado or like avocado
toast. I like sour cream.
Same, but I always like need it with something, right? Like the avocado I need it on toast or I need it like on a chip with guacamole or something like that. Speaking of great foods, we went to a restaurant, me and you, called The Hom in Toronto. Like,
oh my God, you've been like four times.
I went like four times in the last month and it's really good. So I just want to shout that out as we're supposed to be reviewing Cuckoo. But like,
well, because we went there before Cuckoo.
Yeah. So it actually full circle, we'll get to the Cuckoo review and I'll have to put a time code in now or else people will yell at us that don't know our shtick. But The Hom, great. Everyone go get the pressed torched sushi. And they Oof. Why I love the restaurant is because it's like a Asian fusion restaurant. So it's like Mexican, you know, Japanese and or Mexican Korean in certain things, but like I believe so. But they have really great sushi and some unique sushi. I just get the pressed sushi every time I go because it's like lightly torched. It's just it
almost sounded good. Like you get the depressed sushi.
Yeah. And then when I'm depressed, I go there. And then they have tacos, like Asian fusion tacos. So we got like a gochujang barbacoa taco. And the other night I got the other one, the chipotle beef one. And it was really, really good. It was like, what's the thing you'll get in like a Japanese, like a box the beef that's like I'll find the name, but they also have like a teriyaki chicken and they're just like it's really fucking good. So anyways, we got that before we saw Cuckoo. We should probably talk about that so we can move on.
Yeah. Well, one quick thing to go into Cuckoo, I don't think I've maybe one other screening, but I don't think I've really ever been to many TIFF next wave screenings because you know they tend to skewer to younger audiences. They're curated by younger audiences and they're always at the time of year where it's like right before hot dogs, you know, the like cans in the air, TIFF kind of feels like it's getting closer at this point. And you always kind of forget about TIFF next wave a little bit.
Cause it's only one weekend, right? Like
And
they always do like a battle of the bands and they do some, you know, Cinematheque screenings of older films and stuff like that. I think it's an awesome initiative. So like, I do think TIFF Next Wave is great. It's something I wish I knew about when I was in high school and like something that I would have loved to participate in when I was,
well, cause
there
was Sprockets. Do you remember that?
Kids one, right? Yeah. But, and because I went to school in Oshawa and not Toronto, like it would have been maybe a little bit more difficult. But I think it's such a great initiative to bring in this group of kids. You know, Iman Vellani, who is now Ms. Marvel in the MCU, she was part of a TIFF Next Wave committee. That's
so was Emma Seligman.
Which is awesome, right? So like it's a great entry point to get into that world, whether you want to go into filmmaking, if you want to go into film programming, if you want to go into criticism, like it's great start for any of that. It exposes you to some really great people and you get to be part of a really cool thing. Yeah, I've only been to a few and I usually only go when I went in my 20s when I was closer to being the age that this is for. But you know, the odd time when they have a big premiere for a movie that's coming out further down the line. I forget what else I've gone to a couple of them where they've had a movie that was an advanced screening, like months in advance. Those are the ones I usually get out for. So that's why when I saw Cuckoo pop up, I'm like, oh, okay. Neon horror movie, Dan Stevens. I love.
Doesn't open till August 3rd.
Yeah. Yeah. So I always like when it's like, okay, I get to see something a bit early and we get to talk about it. So I made sure to grab us tickets. So I was excited to see it.
Yeah. Yeah. And ultimately I think the movie is fine. Like, I think it's solid at moments. And I think it finds its footing by the end, ultimately, because when you're dropped into the story, so the story is basically Hunter Schafer plays an American who is living with her father and his new family. The wife is played by Jessica Henwick, and they have a new daughter, a younger daughter, and they're driving to the German Alps because the father, and I think the mother as well, have been given a job to work at this resort and to expand upon the location and sort of renovate a couple of the cabins that are on location through Dan Stevens' creepy owner who pulls out a flute and plays it every now and then. And then you find out that maybe there's some sort of weird mystery conspiracy element to it, and also a strange connection to the actual cuckoo bird that plays a pivotal part. The first 20 minutes after the prologue, you kind of feel like you're out of sorts and you don't know exactly what the film tonally is getting at. You know, like there's part of it that does feel a little bit like Twin Peaks or Lynchian, in the sense of Gretchen, you know, works part-time at the resort and is sort of at the front desk and checking people in, and you know, she's going through her own problems and wants to go back to the US and is trying to find any way possible to escape and doesn't feel like she fits in to her father's family and is almost a cuckoo in her own way, you know, in terms of intruding on someone else's nest. And with that storyline, you kind of have, you know, the inevitable sort of reveals that are set up in the first act with the relationships that she has to her family. That's both standoffish, but somewhat comical, because there's a sort of an ongoing sort of routine of every time Gretchen comes across this potentially supernatural creature that potentially is stalking her in the way that almost is like It Follows plays. You have the character getting injured, and it almost plays comedically because, you know, the parents are never concerned about her. They're more concerned about the younger daughter, who's also
showing signs,
exhibiting strange signs of,
seizures.
Yeah. So she's at risk, but obviously, you know, Gretchen's going through some things as well. It's, you know, the director released a sort of an opener to kind of explain things. And he basically said that the movie is kind of summed up through sadness and fear. And you can see that playing out and how, you know, the idiosyncratic nature of the characters on top of the atmosphere and tone don't always work. But when they do, it does feel like you're watching something not dissimilar to A Cure to Wellness. I don't think it's as fun as A Cure to Wellness, and I think A Cure to Wellness is meaner, but this kind of feels like it's in that zone of, you know, single location, person going through something, but then also sort of like a weird conspiracy angle or something more sinister happening that has a supernatural connotation to it.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same page where I mostly enjoyed myself throughout, even though even after watching it and talking about it with you, I still don't know what the fuck was going on or what happened. But like,
what happened?
Yeah, like, but there's enough there from, you know, I think I really like the sound design. I think there's enough weirdness in the movie to kind of carry you through that mystery where, even by the end of it, if you still aren't really sure why people were doing certain things or what the motivations were, what they were trying to accomplish, that the style was enough to kind of carry you through. I really love Dan Stevens a lot. I'm happy to see him pop up in anything, and getting him in, you know, Godzilla, Kong recently, getting him in this. And then we're also...
He's also really good in Abigail.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, he had... I know this doesn't come out till August, but getting all three of those things, which I haven't seen Abigail yet, but he is one of the reasons I want to go see it. I think he always has fun and brings this off kilter energy to the movies that he's in. And like, he can play both very weird and very straight. And I think in this going, you know, the best weird little flute boy that, you know, we've seen in movies since Alien Covenant. Like, it's, I'm here for that. I think it, you know, takes a little too long to play its cards to kind of get going, or for really anything of consequence to really happen. So, you know, I'm kind of split down the middle on it. Like, I didn't hate it. I didn't really love a lot of it. So I think it's something that will kind of evaporate from my brain pretty quickly, to the point where, you know, it's weird enough where maybe we'll reference it here or there with the flute stuff, for all the stuff with the cuckoo bird and what happens with the creatures in the movie.
Your family belongs here now.
Yeah. Like, it had some enough off kilter, weird energy that like it did carry me through it. So like, I enjoyed myself, but it's like a soft enjoy myself. Like, I can't really say, like,
a soft pass.
Then. Yeah. Like, I don't know if I can really recommend it. I don't, it's definitely not for everyone.
And, no.
So that's where I kind of stand on the whole thing. And I like Hunter Schafer a lot too. Like, I haven't really seen her in anything.
Another Euphoria actor.
Yeah.
Right? And, Sydney Sweeney, Hunter Schafer, and Zendaya all in these kind of,
Jacob Elordi too, right?
Yeah, genre movies or genre skewing films, and kind of trying to find their own footing as like the next generation of movie stars and actors. And yeah, I think Hunter Schafer is quite good in terms of balancing both, you know, the unintentional comedy of
of
what Gretchen goes through,
of it.
You know, like, and even pointing things out to people, because there is also that feeling is almost like, is everybody under like some sort of weird spell, and like, she's the only one that can kind of see what is really going on. And so you have that aspect of feeling like trapped in a place that you can't get out of, which is something that I always kind of enjoy. You know, as you mentioned, Dan Stevens, I think, is the best in this in terms of performance, but also character, and kind of being like this weird pseudo James Bond villain. You know, he sounds like Christoph Waltz at times with the way that he delivers his lines in the German accent. And he's in, you know, he's fluent in German and speaks it in this film, and also in another movie called I'm Your Man. But it's what you were saying before, like, Stevens is one of those guys, and I think that's why The Guest works so well, is that he has the kind of like, you know, good looking, every man, you know, trustworthy kind of guy look. But there's also something about him where he can turn on like, oh, something's cracking, or he's a ticking time bomb, or there's just something slightly off in moments.
Yeah.
And he plays that so well here, where at times you think, oh, like, he's, you know, looking out for Gretchen, and the way that he, like, the thing that I laughed at the most is like when the family first moves into their new place, he's always butting in on, you know, them getting settled, but also specifically, you know, like on the father-daughter moments when they're trying to have conversations, and then like he comes in the room and tries to do the parenting thing. And it's very funny that also he feels like a cuckoo in a way where like he's intruding on them and sort of interjecting himself into the family's relationship. I also really enjoyed the mechanism or the device that the creature has in the film. I don't want to give anything away, but the way that that works, I think, is actually kind of clever, and how it kind of uses editing to express how physically the bird works.
Yeah,
and
I did like
sort
that.
Of defense mechanism is, I guess, and how it's able to ensnare its prey. And visually, I think the cinematography, it looks nice. Like, it has a nice textured filmic look to it that feels, you know, like almost of the 1980s. It's very warm and nice, and even setting it in the German Alps, there's something also off-putting about that as well, because when you think of like the German Alps, you think of like a ski resort or something like that, but then seeing it in the summer months, it's like this sort of abandoned sort of theme park ride or theme park, you know, in general, where it's like, okay, well, when it's not working, this is kind of what it looks like. And it's just basically dead. And also, you know, the French, they love pushing the envelope when it comes to age inappropriate relationships, as one sure character hits on Gretchen. So,
yeah, yeah. And the way that all plays out, too, is
it's also kind of funny. Yeah, in a weird way.
It's just like, wait, what? Like, there are many moments that you just are like, and I think that sums up the wait, what is like how this movie is like summed up, because I still am like, kind of just like this throughout the whole thing, or like by the end of it. So, yeah, you know, soft pass. I'm going to give the movie a 3 out of 5. I know we spent 12 minutes of this talking about food and then another 12 minutes talking about the actual movie, but I don't have a ton more to say.
I don't either. I think it's fine. And yeah. I think like it is going to be hard to recommend to people other than film people, even if the film people don't like it. Like, if you're getting a Neon or A24 horror movie, you kind of have to have the expectations of this isn't going to be a traditional, you know, Friday night fright flick or slasher movie, in the way that, you know, Abigail is more conventional in its narrative structure than this will be. So if you're going from, you know, seeing Abigail and discovering Dan Stevens in that, and seeing like, oh, and you know, August, it's like, oh, he's in this movie, you're not gonna get that. Even though, you know, Abigail and Ready or Not, like, they play with horror tropes and conventions in certain ways, those movies do feel like they're of like a certain style that kind of is more not conventional but consumer friendly. Where this, like, I would not recommend to even just like straightforward horror fans. Like, I would say, like, there's the caveat of it being an art house movie first and foremost.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. So, did you give a rating or no?
No, I'll give it a 3 out of 5 as well. Like, I think it's well made. I think the moments that work are interesting. I think the, you know, I was disappointed that Jessica Henwick didn't really get much to do, which was unfortunate because
she's good. I like
she's
her.
Good in a lot of stuff. But yeah, I think Hunter Schafer, I really appreciate that she's choosing weird stuff like this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, I know she was in the last, like, the Hunger Games prequel, and I get it. Like, you know, you want to be in something big and it's a franchise thing. But going for something like this and probably helping getting financing for it, because you're just coming off of, you know, Euphoria, it feels like, oh, like, this is kind of cool that you have this group of actors trying to not go just like simply the commercial route. Like, even Sydney Sweeney being passionate about Immaculate, which was a movie I didn't really love by any means, I do respect the fact that, like, she found something in that material where it's like, I want to produce this and I want to get this made, and it's not, you know, another Anyone But You or something like that. And so, you know, even with Jacob Elordi, you know, playing the most despicable and gross version of Elvis, like, it's just interesting that these people are really coming into their own. And
yeah, they're going more the Twilight route,
the Robert Pattinson way. Yeah,
Robert,
you know?
Pattinson and Kristen Stewart,
freaky little, like, boy.
Yeah, I think seeing what Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart did after Twilight, I think a lot of these younger actors might look at that and go, I can use this to catapult me into, yeah, you can do the bigger movies like a Batman or a Hunger Games or Charlie's Angels or things like that. But, like, you can kind of use that to also go, okay, what are some interesting filmmakers I want to work with, right? Like, you have Hunter Schafer working with Yorgos on Kinds of Kindness, and
she says she's only in one scene, but that's still
fine
cool
with me.
David
Lowery, right? And, like, and then and even on the other side of thing in video games, Hideo Kojima is using Hunter Schafer in his new game. God, what the fuck is it called? But she's also now become one of his kind of muses that he uses, like, in, and he's like obsessed with her. So everyone kind of dunks on Kojima because he's
lusting
posting
after her.
Yeah, he's always posting about Hunter Schafer on everything. And I'm stalling so I can get the,
because it's not Death Stranding, right? So
no, she's not in Death Stranding. She is in his new game, which is called OD. I don't know how I didn't remember that, but. Hunter Schafer is in OD. with Sophia Lillis and Udo Kier.
What a weird combo.
It's
I mean, good for Udo Kier. That's awesome.
And Jordan Peele also co-wrote the game with him. So,
okay, that's why I was seeing those photos with the two together. Okay.
Yeah. So, it'll be interesting. But so Udo she Kier. Has, yeah, Udo Kier.
Although I could see Udo Kier playing the Dan Stevens role in this because it's the
absolutely.
Other thing
yeah.
that John Malkovich was originally cast in this in that Dan Stevens role for Cuckoo. So,
yeah, it did seem like a role that was meant for an older man, but yeah. I think Stevens does a good job with it. So.
He's funny.
Yeah, no, a lot of people that I really enjoy in this movie. So yeah, thank you all for listening or watching. We really do appreciate it. Let us know what your favorite cereal is on Twitter or whatever.
Twitter poll.
Yeah, please, you know, go check out our Letterboxd, which is Untitled_Movies, and you can find all of my other work around the internet at but mostly at untitledmoviepodcast.com. And you can follow me on all those social medias at Matt Rohrbeck.
Yes. And you can find more of my video reviews on rogerstv.com/cinemascene and on all the social medias at EM6211.
Until next time.
Break out those flutes, guys, because we're playing them. I think my favorite flute playing has to still be the Green Ranger in Power Rangers.
The OG. OG. Flute master. Don't buy this. Do not, unless like you really love raspberry, which I like raspberry flavored things, but this has like the one thing I love about Coke Zero. Sure, it's just a bunch of chemicals in liquid form. It doesn't necessarily have that chemical aftertaste that a Diet Coke has.
Or Prime.
Or lesser or Prime. Yeah. where this just tastes artificial. And I don't. And maybe people are like, Matt, you're insane. Coke Zero has that. But maybe I've just had so much of normal.
Well, I think
Coke
when
Zero,
you have a lot of Coke Zero, not like have over time, but like I think if you drink, because there was a time where I was drinking like two or three cans of Coke or even more a day.
But you were always a Diet Coke guy, weren't you?
Well, when I was younger, I was drinking Coke, right? Like I was drinking regular Coke.
Oh, same.
But when you drink a lot of it throughout a day, it does start to have that artificial taste when you drink something else. Like you realize, I've been drinking way too much Coke.
I can't go back to regular Coke now.
I can't either. It makes me shaky. It makes me like feel like I'm going to pass out.
All right, bye, everybody.